Today's episode is brought to you by Cameo. If your organization is looking to adopt Chromebooks, but you need to give your people seamless access to all their apps, including Windows apps, Cameo is the simplest and most secure and most cost-effective way to deliver all the apps your people need to be productive on Chrome OS. Cameo is a Chrome Enterprise recommended virtualization solution and is deeply integrated with Chrome OS and the Google Admin console, making it easy for you to push any app as a PWA to your Chromebooks. And now you can take advantage of a special Chrome OS and Cameo bundle that makes it easier than ever to test. If you're interested, you can head over to cameo.com/unboxed. That's cameo.com/unboxed, or click the link down in the show notes. This episode is brought to you by the official coffee of the Chromecast podcast, Fresh Roasted Coffee, who we've partnered with to make a special edition Chrome Unboxed anniversary blend. Here at Chrome Unboxed, we're not just nerdy about Chromebooks, we're also coffee snobs. And look, we wasted a lot of time hand roasting coffee before we found Fresh Roasted Coffee, and we haven't looked back since. This coffee is roasted fresh to order, immediately packaged, nitrogen flushed, and shipped directly to your door. And although we can't officially say that this Chrome Unboxed edition tastes any better than the normal anniversary blend, that is the word around town. But don't just take our word for it. Pick up a bag for yourself and let us know what you think. You can grab a bag over at chromeunboxed.com/coffee. Welcome to the Chromecast, the official podcast from Chrome Unboxed, where we unpack everything from hardware to software in the world of Chrome and Chrome OS so that you can be more informed on all the latest updates, changes, and devices. Hello, folks, and welcome back to another episode of the Chromecast. My name is Joe Humphrey, and I am joined today by Gabriel Brangers.
Hello.
And as always, Robbie Payne.
What's up?
And we are Chrome Unboxed. We've got a lot of good stuff to talk about today, but I want to start with Pixel 4. It's going to be a continuous segment until the thing comes out.
Yeah. So, yeah. You know what? Till September?
Yeah. Well, maybe August. let's hope this
tomorrow.
It's
going to be October. I'm going to keep cutting you off until you keep saying you let's.
Yeah, I'm done. But how cool would it be if they just send us an invite? They're like, next week.
Yes, Google that would be awesome.
If it is next week, you did hear it here first.
Yeah.
Yeah, there you go.
We have hopes that Google is going to have their hardware event September 9th. But
nobody's gotten on board with me on that.
We're just not sure. Robbie put it out there into the world, and everyone was like, nah.
No way, man. No way, man. And I said I could be wrong, but I don't know.
And that was all tied around the release date of the Max.
Yeah, there were just so many things. So the Nest Hub Max release date that they pulled, you know, like all weird because it got out and then they pulled it and then turned around. It's like, yeah, it's actually is going to be September 9th. That was weird. And then there was all these Pixel leaks that keep coming out. So the stuff we're going to talk about today is actually a leak. So it's according to someone familiar with whatever. But the other stuff was like Pixels or Google's own Pixel leaks.
Right.
So it was Google stuff saying, hey, we're just going to show you some more things about the phone. And there was something else tied to the whole September, like the early date. I can't remember. Oh, the FCC filings.
Showing up.
The Pixelbook 2. Wi-Fi chip.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there's a lot of stuff that
Quanta.
Yeah. It makes a lot of sense that it would be earlier. And there's been even more stuff come out that, I mean, Atlas is absolutely a made by Google device. I don't want to go all the way out on a limb and say it's definitely the Pixelbook 2, but seems pretty likely it's going to be the Pixelbook 2.
There was a recent discovery from, I think it was Kyle again, because he's busy doing our job for us. The new shelf.
They're making the shelf.
Yeah, the icons are doing round icons.
Right, round icons, but the reference is Atlas.
Yeah,
It was a Go link, which is a internal Google thing that they use. So
I mean, it seems very clear. I don't think there's anybody doubting that Atlas is a made by Google device. There's nobody doubting it's a Chromebook. That's clear. It's just whether or not it's going to be branded Pixelbook 2 or if it's going to be yet another thing, which would be, I think, highly unfortunate, to be honest, if they didn't go that route, because
Pixelbook has such great name recognition.
Yeah, I mean, there's good name recognition. It finally has the brand awareness, at least much better than most other Google products. It's got enough brand awareness that people know what it is. And if they're looking at a Chromebook and they're thinking, I want a nicer one, people understand Pixelbook.
Like, right,
you start absolutely. Throwing these other Lenovo Yoga Chromebook C630, and they're like, what?
Yeah, and I mean,
even just though it's a great Chromebook.
Yeah,
it's
just pairing it with the phone, you know, the Pixel phones, the Pixelbook, and then all the other stuff has moved under the Nest umbrella.
It just takes years for this stuff to grow, you know, for it to embed itself.
Now that they're seemingly investing in hardware and really trying to get a foothold, let's just leave it like it is. You've got the namesake. You've got the branding there. Just leave it alone.
Yeah. So other than the shelf thing, there really hasn't been a whole lot else about Atlas.
Yeah, no new Atlas stuff. But I mean, all of that stuff together, I mean, it feels weird, and it's going to be weird. I'm like, even if we're wrong, or I'm wrong, I don't want to throw you all on the hook too, but I'm wrong.
This is you, man. This is on you, bro. And
we didn't say anything.
Yeah.
No. So we're just, even if I'm wrong and we end up on October 4th, just like they've done two out of the 3 years.
Yeah, last year was
October
the
9th. But even if it is, and it goes October 4th, and we go to San Francisco or New York and see it and do whatever, I still will hold to the fact that it was really strange for them to leak this stuff. It's really strange for Atlas to have passed through the FCC this early. It's really strange for Google to, I mean, it's strange enough that they're leaking their stuff to begin with.
That's
already kind of like throwing people off. But this early is real weird, because you start talking about stuff too early and you lose some of that news cycle. So people start buzzing about it a little bit. Well, by the time the event happens,
a month from now, that buzz is gone.
Right. So now you're going to have to keep leaking stuff out. So if they continue leaking their own stuff all the way up into it, maybe that makes sense. And I can see Atlas moving through a little faster than normal because it's been around forever. So
a year and a half, right?
Yeah. I mean,
dude, I'm telling you, it's in warehouses waiting. It's done.
It would not surprise me, which is what they need to do with it for sure.
If anyone has an anonymous tip, please send it to info@chromeunbox.com.
Our mailing address is 111.
I mean, if they need to show up with this thing at the event. You know, I don't know personally, as much as I loved how much press the Pixel Slate got last year. I mean, it was half the show, you know, and
anything to detract from the phone.
Maybe that's part of what that was. Yeah. But man, it got so much time and it had so much of a presence on the show floor. Yeah. Like, it had the feeling that, you know, they thought through this and they were ready to go. And then it stumbled out the gate. I mean, they didn't get it. They should have had that thing ready for pre-orders that day.
Yeah.
And I think they did take pre-orders the day or two after, but remember, it didn't ship until
the operating system wasn't ready. That was the problem.
Yeah. I mean, we're just now seeing the maturation of the things that were brought into Chrome OS 70. Like, just now.
Yeah.
And we're coming up on a year out from that event. And you know, that's just Google. That's how they do stuff. And I get that 100%. But
so perhaps the Pixel 4 is going to be this amazing phone, and they're leaking it out because they're super confident in it. And perhaps
it feels like that.
And perhaps the Atlas is sitting on shelves ready to go, and they're going to have this awesome event. And they're going to have this, like, just perfect launch.
Yeah,
how cool would that be?
I mean, honestly, I'd be fine with a spectacular phone, you know, because last year's event was weird because they had leaked all that stuff and teased all that stuff. And then it was kind of like, hey, you know, we were just joking. Here's a phone. Be awesome if the Pixel 4 is everything and a bag of chips, and then they're like, oh, and yes, we have a refreshed Pixelbook. This is it. It does this, and that's fine.
Let it be quiet.
It's fine.
Just let it do its thing so that it doesn't attract so much attention, because, like, the Pixelbook came out and people were like, huh, this is interesting. Google said they weren't going to make hardware. Now they're making a piece of Chrome hardware. And some of the reviews were a little mixed. Like, I remember MKBHD being real rough. Now, he wasn't terribly rough on the Pixelbook, but he wasn't super complimentary. And to his defense, there were software issues when it first came out.
And the price.
It didn't quite deliver on all those things. But, you know, it has come to the point where about a year after, and I said this in the review, like, this is a true flagship. It showed where everything was headed, and it did. I mean, the Pixelbook showed up and changed everything around Chromebooks. I mean, it just changed the way we look at what we expect from more expensive ones. It changed the hardware and the attention that manufacturers get. Like, it just did all of those things, and that's what it was made to do. And then all of a sudden, it started getting praise out of nowhere. It just seemed like every tide just completely shifted. Media started going back to it going, God, I use this thing and I love it.
Yeah.
Like,
non-tech websites, guys who have been in the news industry for years who write for major news outlets saying, hey, I've been a Mac user for a decade. Guess what? I'm using a Pixelbook now. I love
this piece of hardware. Yeah. Like, and so it was such a bummer to see Google take that. Like, that momentum had just started almost organically, like grassroots. And I think maybe that got them a little over anxious. I don't know, with the Pixel Slate. And the Slate came out, and I feel like they thought they could kind of cash in on what they'd done. And they're just not there from a brand recognition standpoint. They're not there from getting people on board with Chrome OS. And I think, personally, I think this Pixel Slate hurt more than it helped.
Right.
From the general public's view of Chromebooks. I think people looked at them and went, yeah, see, this isn't for me. Like, this isn't any good. Chrome OS is just not what I should be using or whatever. And so that was a shame, because the Pixel Book really did something great for the market. And I think the Pixel Slate detracted a little bit, if anything,
absolutely,
from it. And so I'm hoping all of that to say, that's why I want them to name it Pixel Book 2. Like, stop trying to, you know, don't call it a Pixel Notebook or something stupid, you know, like that honestly, Google tends to be with marketing and hardware sometimes prone to doing stuff like Nest, Home, Hub, Max, a million.
Speaker. smart speaker, well, you know, like, device.
I don't want to go off on a rant about that, but what is going on with that naming? Like, you just got people to say Google Home Hub or Google Home this and Google Home that. Let's take that out of all the vernacular. Nest now.
Because we
acquired a small company. Absorb them and move on. Like, how many people are like, oh my God, I have to have a Nest whatever? Like, most of the people I talk to don't even know what Nest is.
No.
And you acquired them years ago. Like, let that name die and just absorb it. Whatever. It's weird.
I was working on an article and came across that on Google. It was like a Google support
forum. Oh, yeah.
And it said Google Nest Speaker is what they called it.
You found Google some Nest too, Gabe, speaker. Right? Like, that's what they are branding them as now, right?
Well, the speakers are still supposed to be – what I read said they're still Home.
Yeah. Exactly.
So the display is Nest. The new products are Nest.
Boy.
The speaker. So the Mini, the Max.
And the regular are still Google Home. Still
Google Home.
Which doesn't make any sense. I mean, it just doesn't make any sense. Like, if that thing on the shelf over there, which I'm pointing right now at a Nest Hub.
That's the OG.
Nest Hub, right? That's what that is now.
Right. Oh, yeah, that's what they're calling it now.
When we got ours, they were the Home Hub. It's the same thing.
That's what I want to call it. But the Nest Hub, if that thing is a Nest branded thing, and I'm pointing now at the Home Max, it either should be the Nest Max speaker or both of them should just be called Google Home something. Like, it's so ridiculous. And so, like, when I see them do stuff like that and make choices like
that,
makes
you worried.
I'm not that confident that they're going to be like, the smart thing to do would be to stick with Pixelbook because it's got a lot of positive feedback and there's a lot of positive momentum behind it. So let's stick with that branding. Like, the only thing it seems like they've been able to stick with from a brand standpoint is the word Pixel. Like, they love that. Yeah, yeah. They've stuck with that. But I'm just like, oh my gosh, it's so infuriating because I'm like, there are other companies that do this right. They do it right. Apple's one of them. And I don't even like Apple, but they at least know how to brand their stuff and they just stick with it. Yeah. Like, you can't keep changing it.
Let it grow over time. People get used to it.
So if we get new speakers next month or October, are they...
They're going to be Nest speakers.
No, they can't be.
Well, that's what they said in the article. Because the
speakers on, if you go to the Google store right now, the displays are Nest and the speakers are Google. Yeah. So what's it going to be?
The article I read said Google Nest speakers. Because remember, I was writing, I was like, I told Robbie, I'm like, what should I call it? So I just wrote Google Smart Speaker.
So why rebrand the Home Hub and not rebrand the speakers that they already have? That
it doesn't make any sense. Anyway, like...
all of that to say,
who's in charge of that now? Is Rick over that?
I don't know.
Rick Osso, if you're listening and you have anything to do with that, can you key us in here? Something?
Give us some information.
Some guidance.
Can we get rid of the Nest branding?
And honestly, Home Hub is so much easier to say than Nest Hub.
Yes.
I don't know.
I like Home Hub.
I do.
That sounds good.
Google Home, whatever.
Yeah.
It's a Google Home speakers. Max.
Google Home Mini.
Google Home Mini. Google Home.
Google Home Google Thermostat. Home
Hub Max.
Google Home Chromebook.
Yeah.
No.
Maybe surely that's not what it all was. Like, well, everybody does know. If you know Nest, you know their thermostat. Like, that's right. What you know. But then leave it at that. Let that be the Nest.
They have cameras.
I don't know.
Yeah. Whatever.
Okay. All of that to say, there are some Pixel 4 leaks. That's where I started this.
Yeah, there are. Sorry for the rant.
13 minutes later. Sorry, folks. We're passionate about
this. We're keeping
it
short today. It's fine.
Yeah, exactly.
It's fine.
So we do have some additional Pixel 4 leaks. These did not come from Google.
Correct. These are true leaks.
9to5 Google, I believe, reported from a source. Two things, right? So the 90 hertz display.
Yes, which is awesome. I honestly didn't expect that at all.
Right. Oh man.
Because there's some gaming phones with it, and I'm like, Gabe's got the OnePlus 7 Pro, and it has it, and it. Honestly, every time I look at the screen, I'm a little envious.
It's nice.
Like, yeah.
There's just something really smooth, buttery looking about that 90 hertz.
They're going to call it smooth display?
Yeah, I think that's what they're going to. Yeah, they'll brand it as whatever they're going to brand it, but whatever. Like, it's like a 90 hertz display.
The Slate had molecular display.
Yeah.
Which I always think is funny. But there was one other leak. What was the other leak? I'm like.
That was 6 gigs of RAM.
So yeah, so that was the other part of it. And then they said that the same person said there's going to be some sort of. They said DSLR attachment.
It's modular.
I wouldn't say it's actually going to be any kind of DSLR because that would include a mirror.
Hopefully, part of it. No, right. Yeah, that's not possible.
That's not what it's going to be. But they're probably meaning like some sort of attachment thing. My hope would be that they just partner with Moment.
What was the company that did all the? Was it Motorola?
Mods.
Moto mods. Do mods.
Those were not cool.
Yeah.
No,
they were cool in theory, but yeah.
Well, I mean, and then you had
Red did it too with their
hydrogen.
They just never put out any of the mods.
They said, you know what? We're just going to make a new phone, and no.
Yeah. First one didn't work out. When one thing doesn't work out, just do it again.
Something else. Yeah.
But shout out to the folks over at Moment. We've been using those lenses forever, and they're fantastic. Yes.
So if they built something like kind of next level for Pixel, which would make
exclusive,
sense.
I mean, it's sold, through Moment and on, the Google Store. That could be a big win for both brands.
They've been selling Moment stuff on the Pixel or on the Google Store for Pixel 2.
I mean, those guys were at the event last year handing out cases, and they're right in the mix.
I would assume if there is going to be some specialized thing, if it was going to be something more than just, if it's just a case and a Moment lens, like that, honestly, in general, it's kind of plenty for most people on a phone. But if they're going to build something by Google, my guess would be they would partner with Moment because they know what they're doing in that space, and they make some dope lenses.
The thing to me that could be interesting, so it has two cameras on the back, correct?
Yeah, so we're getting a 16 megapixel telephoto, and then the same 12 megapixel regular sensor.
So perhaps they make it wouldn't all be on one lens. It would need to be like two separate attachment areas. Mm-hmm. But like, what if they made something like that with Moment where you could have two ways of connecting the lenses or something?
Yeah, that would be cool, because most times Moment ends up having just the single spot. It goes on the main shooter basically, I mean, if I'm being honest, like one of the things I wish that would show up on the Pixel, because I think it would, I can't imagine what Google software would do with these photos, but if you've seen the Oppo, whatever their newest one is,
7, 12,
and there's a couple other companies doing this whole telescoping lens. So you basically get the telescoping part of the lens that runs vertically up the phone. So imagine like the way the S Pen goes into a Galaxy Note kind of thing. And so you have so it's periscoped up. So the motorized part of the lens is kind of buried in there. Right. So you can actually get a true 10x optical telescoping lens on your phone, which is nuts. And TLD, Jonathan Morrison did a video showing like, I'm going to take this thing out and use it 8, 6x, stuff like that, and look at the natural bokeh you get by using, true lens and true focal length and all that kind of stuff. No software needed. Oh, it was so cool to see those types of shots coming from a phone. And I'm like, can you imagine putting that with Google's software magic? Oh my gosh, that would be awesome. So I'm hoping that trend continues. We're seeing more phones with it. And that might be something down the road. Instead of just having like a 2x telephoto lens, you get something else like that has up to 10x optical zoom on it, which would be really cool on a Pixel.
I still, I can't remember who it was over at The Verge that talked about this, but there was a video a while ago about one of the folks over at The Verge still carrying around a camera. You know, they still carry around their, I can't remember what it was. It was a Hasselblad or something cool, you know, and they still carry around that actual, the camera body and lens, and, you know, detachable lens and all that when they want to go out and take photos. Is it going to be like with a lot of this technology and actually getting true focal lengths on these smartphones, like how far are we away from just your phone being honestly just as good as, you know, the Sony that we use?
I don't think that far, because computational photography is getting so good. Like if Google hadn't made the moves that they had with computational photography the way that they have from a software perspective, I would say we're still way far out from mm-hmm. that, because no matter how good your lenses are in this phone, they're never going to match right. these $5,000 lenses you can mm-hmm. put on a camera. I mean, we know that. We, you know, even with the camera we use, the difference is still there.
Yeah.
For everyday people, I think we're already there.
Yeah,
oh, for sure.
For the everyday Joe, for the 80%, 90% of people walking out their door, you are going to be, and I'm speaking from Pixel, I don't want to say that this is true of all phones, but if, like, my wife took a 6-week class, she went to the college and took this 6-week class in photography so she could learn to use this DSLR that we had bought, and she wanted to take good photos, and we bought a pretty expensive lens, a couple lenses, and kind of kitted this thing out. It was a Canon. I don't remember which one of the Canons it was, but, you know, decent camera, and she could shoot some pretty cool stuff with it. But at this point, when we go on the last photo shoot we did with the kids, we took them up to a park, and we do it every spring. I just took the moment lenses with me, and I was taking photos while she was taking photos. We ended up using all mine, all of them.
Yeah.
And she exactly. was, she got really frustrated, and I was like, well, no, we didn't have the moment. I actually just, I used the company's moment. We bought a moment lens after that to take with us to Germany, because she was so impressed by how good the photos came out from the phone. And so I think for general users, I think we've already eclipsed that, like with certain phones. I think we're to the point where, because most people don't know and they're not going to spend the time to learn how to properly line up and light and take a photo, Google just fixes most of those things for you.
Yeah. I think for, you know, professional photographers that know the ins and outs of cameras, and I'm still a novice, like I'm still learning camera gear, but I can at least, I can really get in and tweak camera settings to get a certain shot. Like for that sort of stuff, when you're going to shoot a specialized thing, you're shooting a specialized thing that you're trying to accomplish, like, yeah, full on cameras. I mean, I'm not saying the phones will never get there for that kind of thing, but they might.
Yeah, they could. I think we're a long way from that.
Yeah,
but I think, like, we're a long way from, like, general, professional photographers being like, I don't even need my camera anymore. I'm fine with this.
I've got these lenses, these, like, sweet, you know, full lenses I can throw.
Right, and I think that's the point, is that for the people, and no offense against them, because this is totally me, the people that are going to Best Buy and buying even a $700 or $800, you know, Nikon or Canon or whatever, with a decent lens, whatever your, what's the normal, I think we carry around a 18-55 is what our go-to lens is at home. People that are buying that, you can have your phone and invest a lot less work, a lot less headache, and you're not toting around a bunch of camera gear, and get just as good, or as Robbie said, better photos. Because we have a nice camera at home. My wife has a Nikon. She's gone through classes too, and I'll be honest with you, I have no idea how to use it. I have no idea how to take a good picture with that camera, and I would have to sit down and figure out how to do it.
Right.
I can pick up the Pixel phone and even on auto take a really good picture.
Yep. Most time on auto, honestly, so. Because again, computational photography is leveraging machine learning and AI in a way that can think about a particular scene in a way that I can't. And frankly, I don't want to sit and learn enough to have to figure out settings and switches.
You just want
to
pull your phone out.
I want to capture what I'm looking at because there's something about what I was looking at that caused me to go, huh, I'd like to remember that. And I grabbed my phone and I took a picture. And all I really want, for the most part, is for it to capture that in a pretty realistic way.
Right. Because your eyes are doing all of that crazy stuff and making things
between our eyes and our
properly.
Brain.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's crazy stuff going on.
To have a camera, do that.
Right.
The AI there is.
Yeah. I mean, it's awesome. And I think it, again, for general people, it supplants the need to go and try to take courses and learn how to use a camera that requires a bag and all this other crap, like your phone's in your pocket.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
I don't know who coined the term or the phrase, but when they said, you know, the best camera is the one you've got with you, you know, and that makes you win from a smartphone perspective because it's there. Why? I don't want to carry anything else.
Right,
I just want the camera.
Yeah.
Or I just want the phone. I'm sorry.
Yeah. So we'll see. We'll see what they end up doing with the Pixel 4. Maybe some sort of cool, different thing. I don't know. Maybe they do something totally different. Maybe they don't do anything with Moment. Who knows? But again, shout out Moment. If you don't own a Moment lens, but you're a smartphone photographer.
Yeah,
if you
they're
like,
awesome.
If you love posting things on Instagram, if you like getting awesome, if you're the person that's always taking photos at your family stuff, that's always me. Hey, Joe, can you get a photo of this?
Yep.
Moment lens, all the way.
They're amazing. Worth every penny. Yeah. They just came out with, I think they have the OnePlus 6T and 7
that's
now.
Right.
So the cases for those.
Yeah, they're
totally dope. Worth it.
Dope. So let's talk Stadia. So Stadia, for those that don't know, this is Google's game streaming platform, and it's coming out soon. The Founders Edition is going to come out in November, and they've done one Stadia. Was there been one or two?
Just one Stadia Connect.
One Stadia Connect, which is their branding they're using for their marketing PR pushes.
Yeah, kind of their announcements.
Announcement stuff,
kind of thing, yeah.
So we've got another one scheduled. And you told me the date, but I didn't write it down, so I don't remember.
August 19th
will
be the date
soon.
For that. Yeah. So
week and a half?
What are we talking about?
Yeah.
So 11 days.
And this is where they'll put out some more information. We don't know what they're going to announce.
Yeah, that's the curious part right now because, again, not being like hardcore gamers probably have all kinds of questions still. Like, I don't really have that many more questions. You know, we've talked internally a little bit about
it. We come up with the questions that like the average guys come up with,
right?
Because we're average guys that sit around and play PUBG on our phones. So
but like we talked about, you know, just like this whole, you know, setup process, UI, what's that going to look like, how's it going to feel, you know, where's it going to come from? So when I go to play Stadia on my computer, if I open my Chromebook and I want to start a game up, I understand I could just click a link and that link can be a deep link
right
to my Stadia account. I can start playing a game, but there's got to be a place somewhere.
Right.
It's a web-driven UI.
Yeah, because my point was like it kind of changes the game for if you're traveling or whatever. You can throw your Stadia controller and a Chromecast in your bag, and you've got your gaming wherever you go. Now, I know you've got to get around the hurdles of captive portals and stuff at hotels, but you can read an article about that that's easy to overcome. But anyways, what's that look like? You're somewhere new with your controller and your Chromecast. You want to plug it in and hook to the network. What does it look like to see the UI for the game? How does it work?
Yeah, I mean, it's got to be something. And you bringing that point up right now even makes me think, like, we were talking about initial setup. Like, okay, Founders Edition stuff comes in the mail. I get it out of my box and I plug my Chromecast in. I use my Google Home app, I'm assuming, to set up the Chromecast just like you normally would. Because, I mean, they're not going to change that. So I need to get my phone out. I set up my Chromecast. It's on the network.
Is it going to be in the Google Home app? Is there going to be a Stadia tab on the Google Home app?
Maybe.
I don't know.
But, you know, that setup, we would assume, you know, the controller will understand that there's a Chromecast nearby and they'll hook up, you know, and they'll move on. But now what? Do I go find a game on my phone and cast it? Or, you know, like, what is...
How does the instance...
Right.
That's started.
A good word, instance. I like it.
Yeah, this what, instance
what
of
triggers
gaming,
the instance?
Right. Which I thought about it from that perspective. I'm like, it feels like they got to have some sort of simplistic UI. But what Gabe was just saying even makes me think more. Like, there's going to have to be a UI. Because if they're selling this thing as like, hey, the box
browse.
They're selling you is here's a Chromebot or a Chromecast and a controller, go play Stadia. Like, so...
Right. So on the controller, you need to be able to browse through games.
Right.
Look up at your TV and find games that you want to play.
Right.
You don't want to have to have your phone and say, all right, I'm going to find this game. Okay, I'm going to click that. I'm going to cast that game, and then I'm going to get my controller to play it.
Right. That,
like, that doesn't make sense. Right?
Yeah. I don't think so.
But then how far does Google go with the Chromecast? Does the Chromecast now become Android TV where it has its own app store? Or is the app store live in Stadia?
How's it work? And also, how are the games getting... Are the games all getting delivered through Stadia, whatever, or are they technically coming through Play Store?
No, the games will be links or in the Stadia thing.
Yeah, like because they talked about, like, in YouTube, you could be playing, watching
right.
someone on YouTube.
They're not
right.
Okay.
They all live in a web address. It is a true streaming service, yeah.
Yeah.
So, well, here's the other thing. We were messing with some Chromecast games. So Joe's researching an article. We're looking for some cool games to play on your Chromecast. I can't remember what the name of it was yesterday. What was that thing I was using where I had it on the Chromebook?
Air console.
Thank you. So it was a thing like you punch in a code on the Chromecast and cast an instance up and all that kind of stuff. But at the end of it, once I had it set up, you know, it's their own internal games and they were kind of whatever, hit or miss. But the UI was really interesting because I could move, there was a UI on the screen and I was moving it around with my phone. Mm-hmm. So my phone was paired
that's what we were doing a second ago as we were browsing those one games.
Right. Yeah. So it's the same concept. As long as the Stadia controller has a way to get on the same instance as my Chromecast.
Yeah. You can then have some sort of UI.
Right. The UI doesn't have to live on the Chromecast is my point. Like they don't have to build software for the Chromecast. They build a cast UI, a UI that's basically web-based that lives on a server, on every Stadia server, and the first thing you see is that first before you launch into a game instance. And so you're not building a UI on the Chromecast. You're building a UI in the cloud that you get to. And so the only question then becomes, how do you get there? If there's a button or something on the controller that tells Chromecast, this is the web address you're going to versus going to a movie or going to Netflix or whatever, you hit that button, that automatically tells Chromecast to stop what you're doing, begin casting a session from a Stadia server. Everything else gets controlled.
I feel
on the
like
server.
They could integrate the fast pair in this somehow.
Yeah, and my guess is it's going to be something like that.
Like once you do your initial setup, then anytime your controller comes on, any Chrome, if the Chromecast is linked to your account, it says, "Hey, previously connected controller found. Do you want to connect to Stadia?" That'd be fine with me.
Well, I mean, if you think about it, that might be why they've been pushing to try to get this through and have
That's
it ready.
True. I mean, so we may have just discovered the secret of the universe right here. Seriously.
Because if you think about it, like if you open up a new Chromebook and you sign in and Bluetooth fast pair, if you're listening and you don't know what that is, Google's working on a thing similar to what Apple does to where Bluetooth devices you pair up are synced with your account across multiple devices. Yeah. So the keyboard or the trackpad that I pair up Bluetooth wise to this Pixelbook, if I log into the Pixel Slate, I don't have to repair them
right.
because all that information can be
it
shared via
It just shows
account.
Up as an available device.
It's there. Yeah. I just connect to it. I don't have to repair. I don't have to go through that
so
process.
Nice.
And it'll be nice, but it makes sense that they would be pushing that for this particular use case because now I open up my Chromebook, I navigate to the whatever it is that got me to the game, and oh, no, I didn't pair my Stadia controller. Well, technically speaking, your Stadia controller doesn't really need to be connected to your Chromebook at all. It really just needs to be connected to the same Wi-Fi and then connected to the Stadia server.
Because it's already synced to your account.
Right. And so it's already synced in the account. It just goes, oh, yeah, use this one. And so that would make a lot of sense for this whole.
Hey, if they go that way, I think this was our idea.
Yeah.
We came up with this.
It's us.
Yeah. We're going to take credit for that one. Right in the middle middle of the Stadia controller is the little Stadia logo and a button.
Yeah. My guess is that's what kind of wakes whatever you're using up to say, hey, I'm here, you're there. And again, the Bluetooth part of FastPair on a Chromebook isn't so that you can pair it to send controls over Bluetooth. It would just be so that they can talk to go, hey, I'm on this server, little controller guy. You get on this server too, and we'll control the same game together. So I'll display the game, you control the game, and let's play a game.
Brilliant.
And so there's no need for like synchronous communication to happen between the controller and the Chromebook. They just need to make sure that they're both pointed to the same server to play the game. So,
gaming magic. Google's changing it.
Yeah, and honestly, general people, if they do it right, general people will never know all of this tech is happening and this craziness is happening. They'll just, I clicked the button on here and I was connected and we played Stadia.
And like, that's how like multiplayer would work too if we all have our controllers sitting here.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, it's going to be wild. It's going to be different. And I hope that they have, since they've been working on this so long and they've kind of set the date and it feels like they're really setting the pace for this, that when it shows up, it just works the way it's supposed to. You know, there's going to be issues. There's always issues with everything. But I hope the general user experience doesn't have a ton of issues. Yeah. I hope that part, like getting a game started, isn't the hard part.
Yeah. I know it's easy. I know it's really easy to put together like awesome looking marketing stuff, you know, like, and you don't have anything to back it up, but I feel like that, like, and they've put out such awesome marketing material for this stuff, already, you know? Yeah. And so that makes me just like really hopeful, but I think they're going to back it up. You know, I think this is, they're going to launch this.
It's going to be 5 years invested.
It's going to be the real deal.
It feels like they've, again, nothing's going to be perfect. Everything has bugs.
Right.
That's fine. But it doesn't feel like they're Googling it on this one.
Don't Google it up. Google.
Yeah. I mean, it feels like they went out and got the right talent, the right people in place. They made the right. And I think they knew they couldn't just show up and wing it.
No, not with something like gamers, man. No, not at all.
I mean,
you get one chance.
Yeah. They're not going to mess with you again if you screw this up. So. No. I'm hopeful that it works out. I'm hopeful that it goes well. I want it to launch well so that it continues to move forward well.
Don't rebrand it Nest or anything like that.
Nestia Stadia.
Like 10 million signups the first day. All right, we're rebranding.
Yeah. Any other speculation of other things that might get announced at this next Stadia Connect?
No, a lot of people have been asking about like certain games like Cyberpunk.
I mean, and they probably will. This Connect will probably, hey, we've got these guys on board. Because how many did you say? 4,000?
4,000 applications.
So, but you got to think, this is a month ago. Yeah, from the time they started doing this to the time they had the first announcement of the platform until now. Because when was that? When was
the very first one?
Yeah.
That was wherever GDC was.
I don't know. When it May? I guess. No,
I think it was earlier than that. Yeah.
It was a while back. Check my records for when we ordered our controllers.
But, so that was the first Stadia Connect.
Yeah, this is the first Stadia Connect.
GDC where they said, here's Stadia. Yeah. Like,
but from that time to now, you've got to imagine there's got to be tons of more developers that have gotten on board and are already there with games. And I would suspect we'll see that on the 19th.
Yeah, I've read quite a bit about developers saying the general process of porting your game to Stadia isn't really that bad. Like it's not very difficult.
That's encouraging.
We'll see a lot of that. I think at the beginning we'll see games just coming over and it's just like playing it on Xbox or it's just like playing it on PlayStation. I guarantee you it will be at least another 6 months to a year before we start seeing games come out on Stadia that fully take advantage of the platform. All that other stuff we've talked about, like these crazy, you know, having a PUBG match with 1,000 people in it or having, you know, being able to say, oh, now you've equipped the eyepiece. So now you can, instead of enemies ahead marking a location up there, you can just let me see through your eyepiece, you know, and I can see in my eyepiece exactly what you're looking at. You know, like little things like that that just aren't capable and aren't possible on standard consoles. You can do that stuff with Stadia. You can make graphics that are just bonkers because you've got...
It's the cloud.
Yeah, you can do multiple instances of these massively powerful servers to run one game because they've just got it. They've got it in spades.
Did they say console in the cloud? Isn't that on the site or something like that? Or the only console?
Yeah,
like,
you don't. Like or that. You don't need a console anymore. Your console is the cloud. Yeah. Or your console is the internet or the web or something like that. That is the whole point. Like... This idea, this antiquated idea of saying, hey, I've got to go buy this box that I've got to carry with me and it's my thing. That's gone from their perspective. And if they can deliver, you know, we're talking about all this other stuff. At the end of the day, they have to deliver on low latency, you know, all the stuff that we've speculated before that Google's in a prime position to do better than anyone. That stuff's got to deliver. Like, if it's laggy, it looks
latency
like crap.
Latency and
like,
jank. If those two things are not there, then they've got to win.
Yeah, the rest of it they can work out. Yeah. You know, they can work out games that take advantage of stuff. They can work out making sure that people get set up right, which I guarantee you they've thought through all of these things. But, you know, those things can work themselves out. If it's laggy and crappy as an experience of playing games, it will fail miserably.
So I've been writing about Chromecast here recently, and you have, or I can't remember which one of you were talking about, the third gen Chromecast could potentially work with Stadia base.
I can't see it not. Number one, the third gen Chromecast, in case you're not familiar with it,
has the Bluetooth.
Yeah, it has the Bluetooth LE. It's not Bluetooth. You can't Bluetooth stuff to it, but it has the Bluetooth low energy just like the Ultra does, which is what it's going to use to communicate with the controller. But in their FAQ, they say they will be rolling it out to future devices. And I think Robbie makes a good point that when the free version comes out in
February
of next year, that might be when the rollout of that happens, because a lot of people have Gen 3 Chromecast. It's capable of doing what the Ultra does, and with the free version, you're only getting 1080p anyway, so you might as well use a Gen 3, unless Google's just really hot on trying to sell Ultras, but I don't see that.
Well, and in that AMA and Reddit where he said, you know, future devices and stuff like that, you know, will be coming, that if they weren't going to do it, he could have easily been like, no, this will be only Chromecast Ultra and then new Chromecast maybe in the future. Like, he could have easily just, you know, nipped that in the bud and didn't.
Think about how many people buy a Chromecast, and it's not something you're going to replace a lot. I mean,
no.
My mom is, I've been trying to get her to replace it, but she's still using the Gen 1, first gen.
And honestly, unless you're watching YouTube TV, that's the only place the first gen falls down on YouTube TV. Mm-hmm. And so, but to go from second to third, I don't know where, like, I couldn't tell you right now the TVs in my home that have the second or the third gen. I'm not sure which one's which. Because it doesn't, there's no noticeable difference between either one. It's not like, oh, this one's so fast and smooth. Because again, none of this is really based on the hardware that's on the TV.
No, it's the exact.
It's all cloud.
Yeah, it's all running through the cloud. It has nothing to do with that. Well, very little to do with that.
Right. As long as the radios are good and it gets a good signal, that's really all it's doing.
Is the third gen Chromecast using that Bluetooth in any other way right now?
No.
Is it doing anything right now?
No, because when it came out and they put it on there, that's what began some of the speculation around. This is way before Stadia was announced. What was the name? Yeti.
That was the
early code name where people were tracking, like, they're doing something with gaming. And I have an article about something. And I remember Project Stream. Remember Project Stream? We were trapped in the airport. We're messing with that. I wrote that article that, you know, Google did come out and say, at this point, Project Stream is not supporting Chromecast. And so it was really weird. I remember them saying that and just being like, really? Like,
why?
We all thought that this is where this was going, and now they're pulling the plug on it. And I remember thinking, like, well, this could be something completely different than we think. And then Stadia comes out, and they're like, yeah, I just need a Chromecast. And so, you know, it's kind of gone full circle that way. And I have to believe the only reason that the third-gen Chromecast even came out was for them to get a Bluetooth, because they didn't have any Bluetooth certification on the old one. It's not like they could have just dropped Bluetooth in it. Like, they needed to rebuild it, but there's no real significant differences in the two devices.
No, the hardware is the same. It just has that Bluetooth radio
and slightly
the Bluetooth radio might be in the old ones. I don't know. It just does not have the certification.
No, because it was before a Google event or something. Like, we were tracking Bluetooth getting added to.
Right, right.
And so it was like, oh, what are they doing with it? Well, you know, and there's all this stuff and nothing happened. And I think that was because if you track, you know, it wasn't more than 3 or 4 years ago. They've been working on Stadia for that long. So I think they said 3 to 5 years, somewhere in there, that they've been actively developing it. And so that makes complete sense that they would have went ahead and got that in there so they can start testing it. They can start using it for people. And so I, you know, 100% believe that they put Bluetooth in there for this reason.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And base comes out when?
February 2020.
Okay. I think we said that already, but I couldn't remember. So Founders Edition, November. The base, which is 1080p.
Free.
You know, you can still buy games.
Though.
Yeah, you can buy games and play them. You can't play the free stuff.
Correct.
And in theory, you could use your third-gen Chromecast, but you would have to buy a controller.
Yeah, so you'd need to buy a Stadia controller or... Well, yeah, I don't think there's...
The TV interface is using the
controller. Yeah, you have to use the Stadia controller.
Unless they have controllers
where they said they'd support third-party, I'm pretty sure it means if you're playing Stadia on Windows or Mac or on a Chromebook, like you could pair it to that device because that has full-blown Bluetooth.
Some of the platforms, do they have browsers? Any of that? This is how many platforms I own. Do any of the consoles have browsers?
I don't know. I'd say at least basic.
Do they?
Like probably, basic browser. You know, nothing you're going to go and hook. I don't know. Xbox put out like some full keyboard mouse support recently, so maybe they do.
Stream Stadia on your Xbox.
Yeah.
I don't know.
It would make sense. It would be hilarious if they released
like
apps for those.
That would be fantastic.
The Stadia app.
Use your PS3 to, because I mean, that's likely, you're at least going to see an Android and an iOS app eventually.
Which on those, we talked about this. It's not likely that you're going to download the Stadia app on your phone and be able to play the game with on-screen controls.
You're
going to connect your controller to your phone and play.
In the demos that they've shown, it's always been a controller.
No one's holding the phone and have on-screen controls.
Yeah, because that would be weird. Well, I'm not saying they won't. I mean, they could offer on-screen controls.
That's like a whole
nother
thing.
It depends on the game too. I mean,
yeah. I mean, it's no different than playing PUBG or whatever we play. Like, you just, as long as all the buttons that are on the controller are on the screen somewhere and you figure out how to use them, go for it. Like, but you'd be at a severe disadvantage because they're not going to put like, oh, we're only going to put people playing with touchscreens over here. Like,
nah.
If you want to get into that, play mobile games. Like, Stadia is not going to be made for that. That's not part of the thought.
Yeah.
It'd be cool if they create some sort of like attachment maybe for your phone and your controller so that your phone can sit above
on. That'd be great. Sitting at an airport waiting on a plane.
Or if they make a version of it that has a little clamp that comes up or something.
See, so that's where I think you'll still have your controller. You had said once this comes in, you probably won't use the controller much. Like, you're going to be all in on gaming on your Chromebook, which I think is amazing. But I think you'll keep the controller for that reason.
I'll keep the controller 100% just because in case I need it. But And for certain games, I'm completely fine with a controller. It's just like first person, third person games. Mouse keyboard.
You're going to like the mouse keyboard. Okay.
I mean, if I should happen to play a racing game, especially if there's any free racing, I'd much rather have a controller.
Yes.
Mortal Kombat or something like that, I'd much rather use a controller.
Yeah.
Sure.
Because I'm a button masher anyway.
Street Fighter.
Right.
I got to get my controller on for Street Fighter.
Yeah.
So lots of cool stuff coming. Lots of cool stuff. Lots of fun Google things happening. We've got the hardware event coming. We've got Stadia coming out. Some new tech, some new hardware. So stay tuned. ChromeUnbox.com. We're going to take a quick break, and we will be right back. This podcast is brought to you by NordVPN. We recommend the service, and we use NordVPN because they keep your browsing secure and private on any device. Whether you're using a Chromebook, an Android device, a Mac, an iPhone, or a Windows device, NordVPN is going to protect your browsing. They also have 24/7 customer support in case you ever have any issues, and they offer a risk-free 30-day money-back guarantee. So if you want to learn more and maybe give it a try, head over to chromeunbox.com/Nord, N-O-R-D. Welcome back, everyone. We're going to hop right into Wi-Fi 6. Robbie's going to get real nerdy here. Just buckle up.
No, we won't go too deep. So in general, if you're listening to this, you are highly likely either connected to right now or will be connected to at some point in your day a Wi-Fi router. And in general, we're just used to Wi-Fi being Wi-Fi, but all Wi-Fi is not the same, and it's gone through multiple iterations. It usually goes by names that most people don't remember, but likely you've seen, at some point in time, you've seen 802.11. Like, you've seen that thing. Well, that's what they've called it. Like, the iterations of Wi-Fi are 802.11 followed by a letter. So, you know, like, a lot of times people go in to buy a router and they're like, oh, well, this is compatible with 802.11 A, B, G, N, and AC. So count those, that's five.
Yeah.
So AC is one, A-C. And so each of those comes with its own set of limitations, set of number of devices it can handle at one given time, the peak amount of upload and download, all of those things. And obviously with each iteration, it gets better. But there's a ton to think about whenever you think about Wi-Fi. It's not just, I'll plug this in and it gives me internet. Like, that's the general consensus, but there's just so much that goes on. I mean, from the way that it chooses between 5 gigahertz and 2.4 gigahertz. Again, those are frequencies. Higher the frequency, the higher the capacity, which means you can get more throughput. The lower the frequency, the better penetration through walls. And so there's a give and take. You know, like Google Wi-Fi does a good job of automatically mm-hmm. choosing which one, you know, so your phone just kind of bounces back and forth depending on the scenario.
Glad he didn't get real nerdy or anything.
Right.
Yeah. If that gives you a taste for how nerdy it can go, I'm keeping it surface level, people.
Yeah, this is
right on top.
Oh, boy.
Chill.
This is off the top of my head. Okay. Yeah. So
these are all
he was researching this right before we start. No, I'm totally joking.
These are all the things just floating around in Robbie's head.
Always there.
At any given time. So, ready to be explained.
So all of those things are getting bumped up. So we've had Wi-Fi 5. Ooh, I forget the date now. It's quite a few years. So I remember seeing Wi-Fi AC getting added to, you know, the protocol a long time ago. So I want to say like 6 years or something, 7 years we've been with the same protocol. So everything else in our world, we like every year, like what's new this year? A new set of processors and we're DDR17 RAM, which really on 4 and 5, like, but you know, like we just expect these yearly cyclical
updates.
Once
we got this current, what we have now for Wi-Fi, nobody, I mean,
it's been really good.
Yeah. Because like your average upgrade. Consumer doesn't notice that their router is not as fast as the neighbors.
And was that partially because of speeds, like internet speeds?
Yes.
So that's internet, like that's fiber a lot. Becoming much more available. Yes. Now, so forcing some of this.
You roll down to your, you know, neighborhood Panera Bread or Starbucks and you get 30 megs down and 5 megs up, you know, okay, usable Wi-Fi, not going to really complain and not going to expect lightning speeds. But yes, lots of people now are starting to get fiber internet. ISPs in general are rolling out fiber all over the place. Even companies like Comcast that don't have fiber optic networks
are figuring
out ways to get like crazy high speeds over their copper, their old, you know, coaxial connections that they've had for years and years and years. So everybody's ramping up speeds, and now it's starting to become a little more clear that, oh yeah, your router doesn't know what to do with all that stuff. So I think when we're talking about Wi-Fi 6, which is technically they finally decided, the Wi-Fi Alliance decided to get rid of, then again, not get rid of, but stop marketing it as 802.11 followed by a letter. But it still is 802.11ax. So that's the new name for this new Wi-Fi protocol. But they're calling it Wi-Fi 6. And actually going back and calling like AC, which is what we've had, is Wi-Fi 5. Like that's, and they've got even a little insignia for it. It'll be on stuff. And so we're going to move the whole market forward, and we're talking like 3 times peak theoretical speed. So that just because I'm saying that these speeds, don't expect to get this on any one device. Your router is smarter than to give all of your bandwidth to one device. And you should be grateful for that. Even if you want all the bandwidth on one device, it likely, unless you have some know-how and can go in and reprogram your router, it's not going to give you all your bandwidth. But theoretical peak speeds of almost 10 gigs throughput on Wi-Fi 6 versus 3.2, I think was in Wi-Fi AC. So 3 times. So again, theoretical speeds of 10 gigs. They're adding beamforming or more advanced beamforming, which is similar to what like 5G is doing with these micro, like mini, what are the little waves called? Not mini or micro. Microwave obviously cooks things.
Macro. No, I don't know.
I can't think what the name of it is.
Nano?
It's something like that. It slipped my mind. But, you know, 5G is using not just regular cell towers. They're putting these little bitty dudes all over cities and stuff that can do these super high frequency, again, really high bandwidth, high frequency, really, really low penetration, like so bad that you go behind a tree and you'll lose these things. And so same type of stuff, so that if you're closer to the router or within eyesight, like the routers have a better ability to send packets of information straight to stuff that it can see. But now it's even more enhanced with dealing with 2.4 gigahertz. Like they've increased the capacity that 2.4 gigahertz can do. So now if you're on that lower megahertz band, you can still get the great penetration through walls and stuff like that, but more people can jump on it. It's smarter with the way it handles multiple users. And so, whereas, you know, like at our office, the co-working office, there's between 40 and 60 devices on it all the time. So, I mean, you've got IoT devices, but everybody's got a phone, tablet, computer, you know, just, it just adds up. Chromecasts everywhere, Google Homes, you know.
Yeah, like so, no one walks up and plugs in an Ethernet.
No, but cable. To be fair, like our little, you know, Wi-Fi 5 powered Google router, our Google Wi-Fi router, holds up really well.
It's great.
We've done the mesh network now, but we were rocking that many devices on one of them for a while. And we got gigabit internet in, and we started doing speed tests, obviously. Like, ooh, let's see how fast we can go. And, I mean, we were maxing out with 250, 300 megs down. And so you start scratching your head, like, well, how's it doing that? Well, first off, it's not, again, it's not going to give you all theoretical peak speeds to any one device. It's got to spread it out. And it doesn't matter if you're the only one on it right now. It's got to be ready if someone jumps on immediately
to not have to steal your bandwidth to give it away. Like, it's always going to portion it. It's just Wi-Fi 6 is going to be way better at doing all of those things, at figuring out how to increase bandwidth. I mean, it's got more headroom, obviously, 3 times more throughput, but it also is much smarter at dealing with those.
Distribution of it.
And that's the main thing they're selling.
And I mean, seriously, how much download do you need on your phone?
You honestly don't need
it. Give the little Wi-Fi antenna a break before it melts down.
But where you're going to see this eventually really take root is in office places like what we just talked about. At Starbucks or in public places where there's just tons of people jumping on and off the Wi-Fi constantly. It's much, I mean, Wi-Fi 5 got way better. Used to, I mean, you probably remember if you're listening to this, times where like resetting your router every few days was a normal thing. Oh, that was in your house, like with a handful of devices on it. I mean, think about these public Wi-Fis that just are bouncing people like crazy. I mean, Wi-Fi 5 does a really good job at it. Wi-Fi 6 is going to probably revolutionize the way that we think about public Wi-Fi.
Yeah.
But to take advantage of it, you have to have a device that also has Wi-Fi 6 capability. So no different than if you had the newest router up to this point, but had a phone, an old phone that only did wireless A, you know, you're not going to be able to take advantages of all the advantages of AC if you have a device that's only A or AB. So it's going to take some time for us to see. It's not like, oh, Wi-Fi 6 is here, and we got devices showing up with it. If it's a host device with it, so like the Google Wi-Fi we expect to see probably at Google's event, quietly introduced, it's probably just going to be Google Wi-Fi 2, or they might just say, hey, a new Google Wi-Fi. It's still Google Wi-Fi.
Yeah, it could be.
This is the one you buy now instead of that one. But we've seen some stuff around it where it could have a version with a screen, maybe. Yeah, and there's a speaker.
Kind of thinking maybe they're going to meld the Google Wi-Fi and Google Home. Nest Home, whatever it is. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Maybe a Google Wi-Fi not necessarily like a speaker that you're going to use for listening to music, but one that is a Google Wi-Fi smart speaker. I mean, I think that'd be a great idea. I have a Wi-Fi sitting behind the television, and then I have one of my little Best Buy assistant speakers behind the television too. If my Wi-Fi was an assistant speaker, I wouldn't have that extra one in my living room. It'd be perfect.
Well, and especially with mesh networks, if you've got a mesh network in your house and you've got these Wi-Fi,
you're talking about getting rid of a handful of devices.
Why not just have that double as, you know, for example, in my bedroom, I've got a Home Mini in there. If that was, you know, connected to the mesh, boom, why not? Like, that'd be dope. Anywho, so you're saying like there's devices that are even coming out like now that may not have 6.
Oh yeah,
Atlas doesn't have 6.
Yeah, that was a little bit of a pain.
Sorry,
point.
I had to throw it in there. I'm sorry, dude.
Yeah,
I'm sorry.
It's an older.
So the updated Wi-Fi chip is not updated enough to be 6. Okay, gotcha.
Yeah, so that motherboard, assuming everything we know about Atlas, if it's that 8th gen U series or even Whiskey Lake, they don't support Wi-Fi AX.
Oh,
they
really? The board itself doesn't. Okay. Yeah. Gotcha.
And so the Wi-Fi chip, I believe that passed through the FCC is not a Wi-Fi 6 chip. Mm. It's just a different Wi-Fi. I will double check that again, because if it is a Wi-Fi 6 enabled Wi-Fi chip, that would ultimately contradict it being an 8th gen chip that we've assumed it is. So that would be interesting.
Uh-oh.
So may have come across some new research here. We'll look into it, but I'm 99% sure that's not the case. So Google's latest Chromebook, if Atlas is what we think it is, won't ship with Wi-Fi 6, and that's not like a deal breaker.
Yeah, or it will, and it'll have a 10 nanometer Ice Lake processor.
Right. Just slipped in somehow.
Yeah, no. Yeah.
That'd be dope.
We are tracking like all the Hatch devices. So we talked about that previously. Just kind of this, if you're familiar with all the nice Chromebooks basically on the market right now, those are all NAMI devices. They all kind of spawn from a single baseboard.
Same baseboard, yep.
That rolled out about the same time as last year.
That's why they all have similar ports, kind of similar configurations.
And so the same thing's happening. Hatch is kind of this unibuild, and all these devices, another new one showed up this week. So we've got 6 at this point now that we know of.
Yeah.
And these are all going to be nice, like
they'll premium. Be nice.
Yeah, I mean, and it's cool because they can do a pretty wide range because it technically does include the Pentium chip that's in that family.
Yeah,
because like with KB Lake,
NAMI did too.
You have a Celeron Kaby Lake. When we say Kaby Lake, we usually are referencing Core devices, but it includes Celeron. So when we talk about these, we're not saying these are only going to be $1,000 Chromebooks. There'll be some of your $300-$400 ones in there as well, but these are the ones that are going to be the next generation of Core devices and premium.
Yeah, perfect example is that HP 15 that just came out.
Yeah.
There's the entry level ones, a Pentium Gold, whatever.
4417.
It's a NAMI board, just like the Dell Inspiron or the Lenovo Yoga and HP X3s, all those devices. It's the same baseboard,
right?
Same ports, selection, all that kind of, like, you see a lot of the similar things, but it's a Pentium chip. It's not a Core i anything.
Right.
There's a Core i3 model, the one that we're messing with right now. But it encompasses a broad range of possible devices that could come from it. And once they've got all this baseboard stuff in place, they can just... and swap out processors and RAM pretty easily. It's why they architecture everything this way. But those boards in general that are based on Hatch, whatever devices we see, are all like that chipset that's coming, which is Canon Lake, which is a 10th, which is another 10th generation, not Ice Lake. Ice Lake is a different 10th generation chip on a different architecture. This is a 10th generation Intel chip based still on the KB Lake,
Skylake,
well, Skylake tech, because KB Lake's technically Skylake architecture.
So this will be the fourth generation of Skylake processors.
Yeah, so Skylake was sixth gen Intel. It's ridiculous. But
if anyone listening is confused, it's okay. I am too.
Everyone is.
Intel's confused. They make the things.
Yeah, it's insane. Yes. But what you need to know is that whole family of devices will support Wi-Fi 6. Mm-hmm. But like the MediaTek devices we're tracking. All those, I looked those up. That MediaTek 8183, not capable of handling Wi-Fi 6.
Really?
So these are new ARM.
Snapdragon 845, not capable of handling Wi-Fi 6. So Wi-Fi 6 is one of those things, it will take years before we fully see the fruits of it. And that's part of the reason why Wi-Fi generations take a while.
Yeah.
Because it's not like a processor. You roll it out and immediately take advantage of it. Think about small businesses. Are they going to go, just because there's Wi-Fi 6 out, go replace all their routers? Right. No.
Right.
I mean, eventually they will.
Waste money because you don't have anything using it. Right?
Exactly. And so it will take some time. So like this whole thing with Atlas. Oh, it's going to come out without Wi-Fi 6. Yeah. Wi-Fi 6 literally just came out like last month. Like it just like hit the market where people could put it in things last month. So that's not a huge loss at this point in the game. It's just cool to see Wi-Fi 6 around and already see Chromebooks in development that are pretty far along in development that are going to have that capability coming out probably this fall, which is, that's really cool. Instead of being like, well, our Chromebooks will see Wi-Fi 6 maybe next year. You know, we're right on the cusp, right on the edge of, hey, this new technology is out and there are Chromebooks that take advantage of it right now. Like, that's a really cool thing.
And that's, that is amazing. We were talking a little bit about like Wi-Fi. I think it's just one last little note here. Think about like even just like 5 years ago, you would have like one or two devices on your Wi-Fi.
Yep.
You know?
That's part of the reason for this move.
And like now
they talk about in the marketing from the Wi-Fi Alliance, talking about the average number just in a household, the number of connected things.
Yeah, and offices. I know. I remember when Robbie came into the office one day, the co-working space we work in sometimes, and he said, take a guess how many devices are connected. And
I mean, you were the only ones there.
Yeah, there was only like two people in the building. But, I mean, we have a lot of people. It's a big space. There's probably, on a daily basis, there's 15 maybe 20 people that come in and out, but this was a time when there really wasn't anyone there, and there was like 40 something devices connected, and it's like, what in the world? But like you said, you've got a Chromecast in every room. We've got Google Home devices everywhere, smart displays, every smart switch
bulbs
you put in your house shows up as a device on the Wi-Fi. Yeah. So
it's just,
even if it's passive, it's still connected and it's still going to use it at some point in time. I mean, I'd say on a good day, we probably have 80 to 100.
Oh, yeah.
Because we also have people that come in. We have a Wi-Fi network that has a password, but it's right there for people to use because it's a co-working space. So, I mean, if somebody walks in and they grab the password, now they've got the password to our Wi-Fi.
We have a Pokemon Stop right outside the window. There's a couple of them. So it wouldn't surprise me that if there are a handful of people who have walked up.
All right, we have ingress portals around our office. For the old guys,
it was the OG Pokemon Go.
That might
that might make it through to one person. One person might
and
get
he's
that.
Sitting to yeah. my left. Yeah.
Yeah. If anyone out there knows what we're talking about, please hit us up on Twitter and let us know. At Chroma
Ingress
Box.
Was awesome. I loved it so
at
much.
At Chroma Box, please let us know. Okay, cool. Let's talk about it. A couple other quick things before we wrap up. Robbie insisted. We were sitting down working on notes, and he had one thing he wanted to talk about. Absolute had to
we're
talk
not
about
doing it.
It.
No.
We're going to skip
I'm
it.
I'm talking about
and
it.
And we're skipping it. We're moving right on to the next thing. I'm just kidding. All right. Virtual desks. Just go ahead. I'm not even going to cue you up. Just
yeah,
talk.
Yeah. Just y'all stop talking. I don't want to go on too long about this. We've hinted at it a little bit through different episodes of the podcast. But virtual desks in all of their glory are in the dev channel right now on any Chromebook. Just go to the dev channel, get on the latest version, and without any flags or any setup or any other necessities, nothing. No settings, nothing. It's all there, right for you to use. And so if you've never used virtual desks, I would highly encourage you to give it a try, because it transformed. Like I've been working this week specifically with this monitor setup that got me away from using a big desktop.
A portable monitor setup.
Yeah. So a USB-C monitor setup. And so the reason I wanted to do all of that was just because for years, even though I've had a job where I could work remotely, because I got so used to having all my stuff on my desk, like you kind of become a slave to that. Your habits revolve around it, and then you feel anxious whenever all your stuff isn't where it needs to be when you're ready to do your job. And so you become a slave to just going like, I'm just going to go to the desk. And the next thing you know, 3 years go by and I've never actually worked a day outside of that office. And to be someone who has a job that can do their job remotely anywhere, I can do my job anywhere. So I'm not just talking about Chrome Unboxed, I'm talking about web development stuff. I can go anywhere and do it. Like, so I should be taking advantage of that. And I just haven't been, because my big screen's there and my mouse and, you know, all the trappings you kind of end up having. And I just wanted to break out of that. I wanted to get back to the point where, you know, since we kind of made some changes with Chrome Unboxed and, you know, I'm out of that main office for the afternoons, you know, I'm sitting on a couch writing, or I'm sitting at a table writing, or I'm sitting at a different desk writing, or I'm sitting in a chair writing, or I'm over at Starbucks, or I'm over at this other coffee shop. You know, I'm at these different places writing, and I love it. I miss being able to do that. There's still part of me that's like, oh man, I need a second screen for this. So I started with this whole, you know, like mobile desk setup. We actually have a video we're going to put out about that. And the idea being, with some of these batteries that are around now that are amazing, you know, for $45, you've got a 20,000 milliamp hour battery that can charge like a 45 watt plug. I mean, who needs electricity anymore? Don't need it. You know, I don't need...
Well, you need it to charge the battery.
Well, you know, whatever. Like, but I could go sit theoretically on a nice day at the
don't
lake.
Have to worry about
the driving range, you know, yeah, you know, like you do.
Yeah, so there's no outlets at the driving range.
Not out the on the range. Yeah. If you're inside, man. Yeah, but out
that
on the range.
That should have been our thumbnail. Man, we may have to go...
Out of the driving range.
We might need to go to the driving range.
Yeah. Probably need
Darn.
To. I guess we got to do
Shucks.
That. So, but that... Okay. So, this all included, you know, I've got my Chromebook, a USB-C cable to my extended monitor, and one other cable charging the whole thing. Nice, tidy, neat. It can all go in my bag. I can take it with me wherever. And then, like, in the middle of this, like, just a few days into this whole thing, like, I removed everything off my desk at the office because I want to create new habits that encourage me to work other places. So I do all that. I work 2 days with this new setup, and then virtual desks finally show up. You know, I've been flirting with them and messing around with them for a while. And, you know, I've been watching and we've been reporting on all the, like, all these little features and all these little things they've been doing along the way. And it's like, man, I can't wait for all this to be a thing. I can't wait for all of it to be a thing. Well, I saw a commit where it said, this all looks good. Merge it all into 77. And so 77 is what dev is in right now. And so I knew the next dev update that came, we would have all of it in virtual desk in dev. And yesterday afternoon I looked and there it was on the releases blog. It said Chrome OS dev mode updated to 77 dot blah blah blah, and I'm like, that's it, this is my one. So I go over and boot it up, and immediately it's all there, like all of it.
And then Robbie threw a party.
Yeah. It was like a little party for myself. You know, and so...
And I had it all along and didn't know because I use a Chromebox at work and don't have a touchpad.
Yeah. So, yeah. With that, I mean, there's keyboard shortcuts and, like, all of those have been merged in. All the animations, these fun little animations that move
things
between screens.
Dropping them into the desk, so much better than it
overview
was.
Overview mode, you know.
It's where awesome. So smooth.
Yeah, you see it, everything shrinks. It
minimizes
as you move
it. It's beautiful. Beautiful. The, great work, guys.
Hitting the search brackets to move between desks, perfect. Four-finger swipe on the trackpad right out of the box, boom, boom. You just between desks. And it was encouraging yesterday, but it was cool to show up this morning. I left the extended monitor and everything at the Chrome Unboxed HQ. And so I went into my other job, showed up, opened. I took the Lenovo with me because I was like, well, if I'm going to work from one device, I'd like a little bit larger screen. So I took the Yoga and put it in dev mode and sat and did my job today with my four virtual desks, which is equivalent kind of having like four monitors, basically, is what it feels like if you're using it right. And didn't miss my external monitor really at all.
So break it down like practically for people that might be listening. What did you have on those different screens and how are you leveraging them? Like,
and so I'm working through how I'm going to do this because ultimately my workflow has been two screens and my big, huge monitor that you've probably seen in videos kind of is like a screen and a half. So maybe two and a half screens technically is what I've been working with. But in general, it's like I used to have work stuff on the main screen, messaging and music or something on the second screen. And so I wasn't sure exactly what to do with all my screens. And so I went to I was working on two websites today, building a couple things and just redesigning a handful of things. So I had the main site where I was looking and inspecting stuff to look at it on my first virtual desk. Slide over to the next one. I had my entire coding panel and where I would actually do all like the nitty gritty stuff. And so,
and what do you use for that?
Shift Edit is what I use for that. It does a lot of other stuff too. I think it can do Python and JavaScript and all that stuff, but I use it for HTML, CSS, PHP. So, it's my go-to IDE. I've been using it for, I think, for 4 years now. So big shout out to them. So I've got full screen kind of Shift Edit in that second screen, but I also threw a Chrome tab or a Chrome instance over there with like the emails with the stuff, some files I needed and some stuff like that. So like that was like nitty gritty stuff. Next desk over, I put my messaging stuff that I always end up having, like my text messages and WhatsApp open. And then the fourth one over, I had like music and I had our analytics for Chrome Unboxed that I like to kind of keep an eye on. And so I could just move between them.
Two things real quick. Robbie showed me this and this kind of blew my mind. It's for anyone that does this stuff, it's probably not that big of a deal. But so he's inspecting a Chrome instance with the inspection tool that's built into Chrome and he drags it to another desk. And it's interacting with the Chrome instance that's on the other desk. It's really cool. So all that works together.
Yeah, and it behaves like as if, again, it just like
it's another
extended
monitor.
Display.
It's another
right,
monitor
right. Right. So my question is, because I didn't look when you had it set up, I'm assuming notifications still come through from other desks? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it literally is no different than if you were to imagine stacking all four of those desks next to each other,
right,
and just having one workspace technically that's just divided up nicely for you, or if you were able to extend to four separate monitors, mm-hmm. like the experience is the same. And what I found like even cooler is one of the features they had early on before they even had different ways to swipe between the displays is the bar at the bottom has all of your open apps in it. And so for instance, if I'm on, like I said, I had messages way down the line on like the third or fourth virtual desk. If I had a notification pop up that I got a WhatsApp message, when I click WhatsApp, so if I'm just working on one screen and I click WhatsApp, WhatsApp opens and then I hit minimize, or I'm, you know, three finger swipe up and get it out click of focus it. Or whatever. But when I click it, it comes into focus. Well, what it does on this, if I click it, it actually, you see the animation. It slides me over to that screen.
Cool.
And then if I click Chrome again, whoop, slides me right back over to where I was. So you can use that to navigate. You can use the keyboard shortcuts to navigate. You can use the trackpad to navigate through them. So I quickly got in this flow where it's just like, I know where all my stuff is. And so you're like virtually moving around in this space. And it was really awesome.
Okay,
I love it.
Okay, so I've got a couple questions too. So when you're working on that site and you've got your shift edit over here, does it not bother you, like, as you're making those changes, or I guess like your inspector, you know, Chrome inspector, you would maybe have on that same one, but like, yeah. I guess what I'm getting at is, for me, like I a lot of times, like, I'll use my side monitor to have like Keep pulled up, and I have like color codes in there, so I can just like go quickly grab them and pull them over. Like, what was that flow for you? Like,
so
did it bother you, like making changes over here, but then having to swipe over to see those changes?
So I would keep most times the inspector, I would keep on the same screen, and I would do that even if I had multiple displays. So if I bring up DevTools in Chrome, in general, I'm either going to minimize the window to be smaller so that I kind of have those two in space on one screen, or you can dock it to the bottom, to the side, wherever, depending on what you're doing and how it works best for you. So there are a couple ways around that. You can back out the scaling a little bit on certain Chromebooks. Like, I couldn't on the Lenovo, but like if I was on my Pixelbook, for instance, it's so high res, I could back it out to give myself a lot more screen real estate, basically, and have the inspector tool. Because if I'm just kind of doing overlooking kind of stuff and not getting nitty gritty in it, you know, I can just kind of see the shape and way things lay themselves out from a design perspective. But in general, no matter what my setup has ever been, the inspector usually stays on the same screen what I'm dealing with, because you're right. Like, I need to be able to hover over elements and see what I'm affecting and see it in real time. But if I needed to move it off the screen, it still works technically.
Right.
But when it comes to my IDE, when I actually go and go, okay, I like what I've done here, I'm going to grab that code and I'm going to apply it, I always had that on a separate screen. So my eyes would always move off the screen I was looking at. I would type, hit it, save, come back to my screen. So now you just replace the movement of your head and your eyes to an actual screen,
swipe
to
away.
A four-finger swipe, and in the same amount of time it would take you to glance over, it's there. And then when you're done, you swipe it back. Like, and it's learning some of those different ways to go about things. But again, in my desire to get more productive wherever I am and in the simplest way and the cleanest way possible, this is massive for me. And I'm assuming it would be massive for a lot of other people too.
So the one other instance, so I use a MacBook for our video editing. If I go full screen on Final Cut and I'm dragging in a song, I just normally have Finder pulled up and I drag that file right into Final Cut. I can't do that if it's full screen, because when you go full screen on a Mac, it takes it into its own little desk,
right? Basically,
right?
Creates a desktop.
So that's always been one reason that it just like frustrates me. I'm like, I'll just leave it. Like, I just go make it as, you know, large as I can. And so
instead,
like, what
of
do
going
you do?
Full
yeah,
screen.
Like, can you on a different desk, like grab a file and drag it over into that desk?
Like, not
for example, for Squoosh, if you had Squoosh opened, shout out Squoosh.
Yeah,
if, Squoosh so is awesome. If you had a Squoosh window open, I just like saying Squoosh. It's fun. But then you had the photo over in your files.
Like a files app open.
On a different desk. Can you drag that
you
over
could
into
do,
that desk?
Three-finger swipe to overview.
Grab that and
go
pull
to
it
that
in.
And grab it and drop it in. Yeah, like, because the way Mac does that whole, like, hey, if you've gone full screen, I'm creating a separate desk for this thing. I've never liked that. I never liked the way that Mac does that. I wish you could, and maybe you can turn
it
off.
It's super annoying.
Know.
I never use it.
And that's what's turned people off about virtual desk, because it creates a virtual desk that only has one thing in it. And and that's kind of defeating some of the purpose of what you're supposed to be doing. So no, that does not happen on Chromebook. So you can go full screen with an app and drag another one right on top of it, because in each instance of each virtual desk, you're a three-finger swipe away from your overview of just the stuff that's on that desk.
So you
could have a file that's sitting behind that window, three-finger swipe up, bring the file into focus, grab your thing, drag it over here into it, and then bring your other one back into focus without having to. Yeah. So it's all because Mac forces you. A full screen app forces you into another desktop with the way that Mac OS just does things.
Yeah. So, okay. Interesting. Well, I'm excited to play around with it. I'm a dual user. I'm using Chrome OS and Mac OS, and I've haven't played around with virtual desks on either of them. So it'll be exciting to try it out on Chrome OS. So.
Yeah. I've wanted it so bad for so long. And so it's cool that it's here. I'll be way more happy when it's in stable. So everybody, because I can't tell you like, hey, go throw your device in dev mode, because you're going to run into stuff.
Yeah.
It's this particular build of the dev channel is good.
Pretty
it's,
smooth.
It's been really good so far. So I've been happy with that, because literally the last build before this one, whew,
It was rough.
Yeah, that one was real rough. I don't know how. I had about a month of canary life being real rough, and I don't know how that stuff made it to Dev.
It's always rough. It was always bad.
Like our WordPress editors and all that stuff, everything was like, it looked like a weird Picasso or something. It was
crazy. And I think that got fixed, too.
That is fixed,
I'm pretty sure that got fixed in this Dev update. Yeah, it was a mess.
So, Gabe, as a Chromebox user, will you be using virtual desks?
I will. I guess I'm going to have to break down and buy a touchpad. Yeah. But
Come on, Bridge.
Bridge's C-Touch gets here. I will be definitely.
It's a two-key stroke now, right, between them. So it's... Because whatever was going on at the office today, maybe it's just the humidity outside in general. I mean, I could not keep my touchpads like clean. Like it was just I kept wiping them down. Like, what is going on?
We live in
middle of one of the most humid places on the planet.
So I went to a mouse today. So I was using the keyboard shortcuts quite a bit to move between them.
I have a new desk set up, so I'm still experimenting. I'm not sure what I don't know if I need a second monitor.
I'm telling you, man, you should try working with virtual desks first.
Yeah. Right.
And because that basically would give you, because your monitor's large, it's 1080p, but it's a physically large monitor. And so, I mean, think about extending that out three more times and giving yourself that kind of space.
But my new desk, it's quite a bit longer than my old desk. So I got a new sit-stand desk, and we're going to highlight that here sometime in the next week or two. But it's five feet long. Yeah, so it's 59 inches long. So I have my monitor and my box, my keyboard, and there's nothing else. There's nothing else on there. My coffee cup, but that's
clean.
It. But, I have my OG Pixel sitting to the left with the Bridge keyboard in front of it. And I was like, a Chromebook there with the dual monitor setup would be kind of cool, too. So I don't know. I'm going to experiment with it and see which one I like. Yeah. But I like having the Chromebox there, too.
Well, another point, too, you can also use virtual desk with extended displays. So you could extend your display and then have four virtual desks on that extended display.
Six screens to look at, five screens to look at. I don't know what would that do.
Technically speaking, it would be eight because what it does.
Oh, you've got four on each.
Right?
Does it?
So when you swipe, it does both screens. Your extended display is one instance of a virtual desk. And so it gives
So then you got four desks.
Two screens.
Okay. Interesting.
Is the way that it was working before. I haven't tried it since it went to the new one. Because again, for me, my goal is to get as minimalistic as possible. And so this gets me down to just a Chromebook for most stuff.
Yeah. No, this is cool. And at the end of the day, this is just additional features in Chrome OS that, folks can use. I mean, people can use this if they want. If not, cool, but it's there. And that's what I love about Chrome OS. Yep. It just keeps evolving.
Yeah, but I mean, with them pushing Linux and trying to get developers on board with Chrome OS in general, virtual desks will be huge. Will be big for a lot of people. Mm-hmm. It really will.
So is it time that we do another video on this? We had done a video way back when all this was kind of first.
Yeah, this I think it's time like kind of a virtual desk walkthrough.
Yeah.
So and like instead what, of what going just, and finding
like tactically or like specifically and tactically, like how are you actually doing it?
Right.
What are you actually doing? I think people would be interested in that. So
And then include all the shortcuts and all that because they're there. Well, you can't see them now, but
it's all in the shortcuts.
The keyboard shortcuts
now.
Are all in the if you go to settings keyboard shortcuts.
If you're
shortcuts,
in Dev,
there.
You do that. Yeah, Control Alt and /, and just type desk at the top. You can see all the keyboard shortcuts.
Yeah. So okay, guys. Last thing, real quick, and then we're gonna wrap up. We've got something new we're doing. This is something we've talked about for a long time now. I mean, we've had discussions around this, but we are offering a great deal on an Asus Chromebox 3, or as I don't even know what Robbie called it earlier.
It was an Acer Chromebook.
It was weird.
Yeah.
I don't even know what
he
said.
His
you
head
made up
the
a
other
new
day,
device.
So
I did. It's real hard. It's still sore. So,
yeah, no, it is an Asus Chromebox 3. So,
yeah. and this is maybe the first stab at us having a shop of some sort.
Yeah, I mean, we spend plenty of time finding deals and sharing them with you all, and it's usually from Best Buy, Amazon, wherever it may be, and we share those with you. But we've for a long time kicked around the idea of offering our own products. We've sold shirts and we've done things like that. But we've talked about setting up a shop, and we're right now in the process of creating that extension of Chroma Unboxed.
Right.
But we came across this deal that was too good not to share, so we've been able to hook up with a supplier who has the ASUS Chromebox 3, which generally sells for around $250 to $260, and we're able to pass that on to our readers for $215. So if you watched our recent Chromebox article, it was the one that I picked as if you're looking for a budget desktop device to use at home or maybe a school or a business where you're just doing web browsing, file browsing, things like that, it's perfect. And it's upgradable. You can upgrade the RAM very easily. You can upgrade the storage. But this comes with the Celeron processor, 8th gen, 32 gigs of storage and 4 gigs of RAM. And it's $215. Tax, obviously, yeah, if you live in the States. But we do have shipping to some different countries. We've had some people in Canada and Australia and some other places ask. And we can ship to those places. Mm-hmm. Our suppliers agreed to ship to those places. The cost varies depending on where you're at. But it's there. And we're hoping that some people will be able to take advantage of that and maybe save some money.
Yeah, right. Absolutely.
Bigger than that, if there's some people out there who have been interested in these for like deploying them for fleets or whatever, the deal still stands, and we're offering a 5% discount for people that do buy in bulk. But anyways, the whole point is we're not doing this to try to pander stuff. We want to create a shop because Chrome OS stuff is kind of hard to find. Even now, even now after it's emerged, you can't go to Amazon and search products that work with Chromebooks. I mean, it just, some of them say that in the title, and some of them do work, some of them don't. We've tested a lot of stuff, and we know what works and we know what doesn't. If we have a product that we've used that we know works with Chrome OS, and we're able to get it to you guys at a discount, save you some money, or just give you a one-stop shop for Chrome OS, Chrome Unboxed approved products, we want to do that. So you can look for that in the near future. We're hoping to get that up and running as, like, so, I said, yeah, an extension of the site. But right now the ASUS is available until they run out, which I don't know when that's going to be. They still have some. The article's on the site. You can check it out. You can actually check out right there on the site. It's secure through Shopify, so you don't have to worry about anything there. Your orders will be fulfilled, and they are about 2 to 3 weeks shipping, so that's clear in the article. We don't want people getting upset when it doesn't show up on their doorstep Saturday. This is a supplier that we've connected with, so it will be 2 to 3 weeks. But you're saving $40-$50 too, which is enough money to upgrade the RAM. So
there you go. There you go. Exactly. And this, you know, this could be Chromeboxes. This could be maybe, you know, some Chromebooks in the future, but this is also just other things
just
that we've
accessories,
found.
Accessories, skins, things like that. Yeah. Just stuff that we think's cool that would go well with your device or a new device, that we're not just going to sell something for the sake of selling it. We want to sell it
because are curated products.
Yeah, they're curated products curated by us that we can recommend, that we can say, hey guys, if you're looking for a place to buy stuff that you know works with your Chromebook, or you're looking for a Chromebook, come here.
Right.
So
if you're interested in that, folks, head over to shop.chromeunboxed.com. As of right now, I think we're just going to set that to forward to that article where Gabe has this product listed. But in the future, you know, if this keeps going well and we keep getting a positive response, we'll likely spin up a store, kind of like a landing page for shop.chromeunboxed.com. So go check that out and let us know what you think. If there's some products that you are interested in and you can't find them anywhere else and you want us to look into it, let us know. Hit us up on Twitter or comment on this post on the website. But folks, that's it for today. Thanks so much for tuning in. As always, you can find show notes and links and all that in the description. You can also check us out online, chromeunboxed.com. But thanks so much for listening, and we'll catch you guys next week. Hey guys, thanks for tuning in. You can find show notes over at chromeunboxed.com/podcast. And if you want to stay up to date with everything that's happening in the world of Chrome and Chrome OS, make sure to check out our website, chromeunboxed.com, and follow us on social media by searching for @ChromeUnboxed. Thanks again for listening, and we'll see you next time.